Chapter 4. The Jewish People and Their Rebirth as a Nation. In the last chapter we took a look at the first of the future prophecies concerning the Jewish people. He lets us know we're living in the last days by Israel returning to the land. We saw that just like God prophesied that the Jewish people, against all odds, would not only return to the land, but they did it in the exact order God said they would. First from the east, the west, the north and the south, in that exact order. Then we dealt with those people who, along with a lie of replacement theology in the church, say Israel has no right to the land, which is also called anti-Zionism. That is crazy because if there's one thing that's clear in the Bible, it's that God made an unconditional eternal covenant with the Jewish people, which included the land with Abraham and reiterated with David, and we saw that the land went to the descendants of Isaac, not Ishmael, which means the Arabs, who today call themselves the Palestinians, have no right to the land. It's God's land and He gave it to the Jewish people. Which is why He said divide it at your own peril. Lord willing, we'll get to that, even more so, in a future chapter. All these events surrounding Israel returning to the land is a major mega sign that we're living in the last days. But that's not all. The second end time prophecy concerning the Jewish people letting us know we're living in the last days is that Israel would become a nation again. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to God's.
Isaiah 11:10-12. In that day the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples, the nations will rally to him, and his place of rest will be glorious. In that day the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left of his people from Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elam, from Babylonia, from Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel, he will assemble the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth.
So here we see God clearly declaring that one day, against all odds, no matter what it looks like, no matter how long it's been, he would not only one day regather the Jewish people back into the land, as we saw last time, but he'd also what? He would raise a banner for them or, in other words, make them a nation again. The Hebrew word for banner there is nes, which literally means, a flag. And that's why some translations literally say, he will raise a flag among the nations for Israel to rally around, i.e. he would make them a nation again. Why? Because they're so obedient and wonderful? No. But because of the unconditional covenants he made with them. God's not done with the Jewish people, including them operating as a nation on the world scene. And it's too bad we don't see any signs of that happening now, are you kidding me? Ever since 721 BC, approximately 14 different peoples have possessed the land of Israel. Yet as we saw, the Bible specifically said that the nation of Israel would one day be reborn. One day they would regain their independence. Can you guess what happened on May 14, 1948? That's right. After waiting centuries and centuries, the people who were scattered all over the world, not only returned to the land, but they also became a nation again. From out of nowhere and against all odds, Israel was reborn. In fact, here's the actual US news clip of that time frame declaring the news of Israel becoming a nation again.
Big story. Universal Newsreel, Voice, Ed Herlihy. Edited by Ed Barch. The newsreel opens with hundreds of Jews on a ship moving towards Israel in 1948 as the nation of Israel is born under Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion.
October 1947, two shiploads of Jewish refugees from Europe attempt to land in Palestine only to be turned away by the British and sent to internment on Cyprus. The British mandate in Palestine was about to end, however, and the UN was debating the partition of Palestine between the Jews and the Arabs as a solution to the turmoil in that country. In May of 1948, a new Jewish state, Israel, was born in a bath of blood. Jewish troops routed Arab forces from the city of Haifa in the first of a series of battles that were to reverberate through the years. In the year of independence, fighting was fierce in the Negev desert area. Here the Israeli troops routed the Arabs and took dozens of prisoners. Meanwhile, on May 14, 1948, the new government headed by David Ben-Gurion is installed in Tel Aviv. Thus, for the first time since the Roman legion destroyed Jerusalem in the year 70 AD, the Jewish people have a nation of their own. United Nations teams accompany Israeli soldiers under the white flag to retrieve bodies of soldiers killed in the continuing strikes with Arab troops. The UN was able to effect some easy pacts calling for a truce, but skirmishes continued to break out. Dr. Chaim Weizmann joined Premier Ben-Gurion in the government. The Jewish patriot became president as Israel went before the United Nations to seek a place in that world body. The Middle Eastern Arabic nations were in violent opposition, and when Israel was voted a membership, they walked out in a body, and for the rest of the day their seats remained empty, but they returned the next morning to no further incident. Thus, history was made as the Jewish state of Israel was born, conceived in strife and weaned in violence. Israel has flourished to become a constructive voice in world affairs, where their flag became a symbol of hope in a troubled world.
And notice, of all things for them to mention on the actual news footage of the event, that it was a flag that was raised as a symbol of hope in a troubled world. That's exactly what the Bible said would happen nearly 2,700 years ago, as a sign you're living in the last days. And it happened in our lifetime. Which is why one guy said,
"This is the cornerstone prophetic event of our age. It is an event that prophetic scholars have pointed to for 400 years amid much scoffing and ridicule by those who did not believe that Israel would ever exist again as a nation."
Aha, ha, ha. God's done with the Jewish people. They're never coming back. The church has replaced them. No, he's not. When God says something's going to happen, including the Jewish people coming back to the land again and becoming a nation again, it's going to happen, and nothing can stop it, including your scoffing. The Jewish people became a nation exactly as God said they would. Now here's my point. There are those who do get excited about this event, and rightly so, because it is a huge prophetic event, a cornerstone event, but sometimes they make a fatal error. They say something like, "Yeah, the Jewish people are back in the land again and they even became a nation again, which means they'll be celebrating the Jewish feasts again, and that's exciting for us because we all know the rapture has to happen on the Jewish Feast of Trumpets." Really? Can we examine that for a minute? This is my concern with that. First of all, how many of you have heard the theory? That the rapture is going to happen on the Feast of Trumpets, which is also called Rosh Hashanah or Head of the Year, the Jewish New Year. It's very popular today, especially every September when that event typically occurs. But for those of you who aren't familiar with it, let me give you a breakdown of it. There are seven Jewish festivals or feasts outlined in the Bible. These include Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, weeks, trumpets, atonement, and tabernacles. While they are mentioned throughout the scripture, we find instructions for all seven laid out in Leviticus 23. The book of Leviticus contains God's instructions to his chosen nation, Israel, on how they were to worship him. It contains detailed instructions about the duties of the priests as well as instructions on observing and obeying God's law and the sacrificial system. God designated these seven specific feasts that Israel was to celebrate each year. However, Christians are no longer under any obligation to observe any of the Old Testament feasts.
Colossians 2:16. "Therefore do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration or a Sabbath day."
Nonetheless, here's what some Christians say we need to know about these Jewish feasts.
1. The feast of Passover was fulfilled by the death of the Messiah. 2. The feast of unleavened bread was fulfilled by the righteous character and sinlessness of the Messiah's blood offering upon his death. 3. The feast of firstfruits was fulfilled by the resurrection of the Messiah. 4. The Feast of Weeks was fulfilled by Pentecost or the birth of the Church. 5. The Feast of Trumpets will be fulfilled by the rapture of the Church. 6. The Day of Atonement will be fulfilled by the Great Tribulation with Israel's national salvation at the end of that period. 7. The Feast of Tabernacles will be fulfilled by the establishment of the Messianic Kingdom.
So that's the basic belief, and I'm not saying there's some truth to that, but here's my concern with it. First, we know when the Feast of Trumpets takes place every year, and so if you say the rapture has to take place on the Feast of Trumpets, then isn't this a form of date setting? The Bible says the rapture is an imminent event, which means it can happen at any moment, hence imminent, nobody knows when it's going to happen. So, if you say the rapture happens on this feast, then isn't this predicting a date for the rapture, which is a violation of the scripture? But then they'll say, "Oh no, wait a minute. The Feast of Trumpets changes each year, so we don't really know the exact time." Okay, can we examine that too? Yes, you are correct, it changes each year. For instance, this is from Judaism 101, from their website, and the dates of the Feast of Trumpets. According to them, Rosh Hashanah will occur on the following days of the secular calendar.
Jewish year 5777, sunset October 2, 2016 to nightfall October 4, 2016.
Jewish year 5778, sunset September 20, 2017 to nightfall September 22, 2017. Jewish year 5779, sunset September 9, 2018 to nightfall September 11, 2018. Jewish year 5780, sunset September 29, 2019 to nightfall October 1, 2019. Jewish year 5781, sunset September 18, 2020 to nightfall September 20, 2020.
So, I'll give that you, the Feast of Trumpets could happen the first part of September or even up to the first part of October, depending on the year, so there's about a month variance on the date, I'll give you that. But my problem is, while yes, the date changes for each year, my problem is this still narrows down the rapture to a one-month time period. So, does that mean I get to goof off for 11 months and not worry about the rapture because it can only happen during the first part of September to the first of October, somewhere in between there depending on the year? Or conversely, does this also mean I can't get excited about the rapture for 11 months of the year, November through August, because it'll never happen according to those dates, due to that's not when the feast occurs? Stop and think about it. It destroys imminency. Not to mention, as we just saw, I can go to a website and look at the exact date of when it's going to occur on the Jewish calendar every single year, so how is that not date setting? This is why every September for the last several years, people are getting all wigged out about the rapture and then all bummed out when it doesn't happen. And it won't happen as long as you keep setting a date. The lost are watching all this saying, you Christians are a bunch of date-setting wackos crying wolf with the rapture every single September and nothing ever happens. Why should I listen to you? It's a bad witness. Now, could the rapture occur on the Feast of Trumpets? Of course it could. But not because of a Jewish feast, but because it's an imminent event. It could happen on any day including that day. So, I'll give you that. But the problem is when you get overly dogmatic about it and thus box the rapture in, which is a form of date setting, and at the same time you destroy imminency and ruin your witness to the lost. Secondly, as we saw, the focus of the Jewish feasts is for Israel, not the church. And so, if you take the focus of these feasts from Israel and replace it with the church, then isn't that a form of replacement theology again? Stop and think about it. I'm not saying the rapture couldn't happen on the Feast of Trumpets, and maybe there is some symbolism going on there. I'm just saying be careful in being so overly dogmatic about it because you'll destroy imminency and encourage replacement theology, whether you realize it or not. To me, the greater point of Israel becoming a nation again is not about the feasts or whether or not we the church celebrate them or even what's going to happen next September or the first part of October and get excited about that. No. Rather, the point is, it means we are living in the last days and since the rapture is imminent, I can get excited today. I don't need the month of September or a Jewish feast to get me exited once a year or 1 month out of the year. I can get excited about the rapture every day. Don't take the news of Israel becoming a nation again in the wrong way and rob yourself or other people of the blessings of imminency. And certainly, don't let it become a bad witness. It's a sign we're living in the last days and it's time to get motivated and a time to get excited now. The third end time prophecy concerning the Jewish people letting us know we're living in the last days is that Israel would be brought forth in one day.
Isaiah 66:8. Who has ever seen or heard of anything as strange as this? Has a nation ever been born in a single day? Has a country ever come forth in a mere moment? But by the time Jerusalem's birth pains begin, the baby will be born, the nation will come forth.
Now, for those of you who may not know, on May 14, 1948, at precisely 4 p.m., the members of the People's Council signed the proclamation and the declaration was made that, the State of Israel is established. This meeting is ended. Israel not only became a nation again, but it was brought forth as a nation, literally in one day. Just like the Bible said would happen when you're living in the last days. In fact, the Jewish Agency Chairman David Ben-Gurion, who later became Israel's first premier, proclaimed that the state was to be Israel with these words, "We hereby proclaim the establishment of the Jewish state to be called Israel." Hence establishing the first Jewish state in nearly 2,000 years all in one day. This, of course, prompted applause and tears from the crowd and the Jewish people began to dance in the streets, but not for long. Gunshots already started to erupt and Arab nations surrounding Israel launched an all-out assault against them that very evening and it has never stopped even to this day. Just turn on your news. Now as bad as that was, you've got to understand the pressure David Ben-Gurion was under in making this announcement for Israel to become a nation in one day to appreciate the miracle it truly was, as this transcript shows.
This year we celebrate 70 years of the re-establishment of our beloved country, Israel. For the first time in 2,000 years, a Jew can be born in the land of Israel, live a full life, and die in the land of Israel. Free, never knowing the exile. This year we celebrate 1948, 1,948 years ago the Roman Empire destroyed our lives. They burned and demolished our temple and exiled the Jews from Jerusalem, all while gloating their vicious imperial conquest in victory. The Jews rebelled and fought valiantly for their freedom. The rebellion was crushed, and the Jewish people found themselves homeless, helpless and lost for centuries upon centuries. The long and bitter Jewish exile reached the darkest time in human history. As we celebrate 70 years, we must remember where we were only 74 years ago.
Ezekiel 37. And I saw a great open space with dry bones. Can these bones live? Only you know.
After the UN voted in favor of the partition plan on May 14, 1948, the Vie of Er, the British mandate, was due to expire. The year was fraught with countless dangers, escalating violence across the land of Israel combined with threats of annihilation from every border and country. American President Harry Truman, in a power play against Russia, began to pressure the UN to reject the partition plan and snuff out Israel's hope for independence. The generals of the Haganah and Hamas stood together opposing Ben-Gurion's plan to declare a state. On May 13, the eve of the Declaration of Independence, General George Marshall, then Secretary of State of the United States, sent Ben-Gurion a brutal ultimatum demanding the postponement of the Declaration of Independence. Marshall, together with the Secretary of Defense, James Forrestal, imposed a military embargo. They threatened that Ben-Gurion's Declaration of Independence would trigger a regional war that would doom the Jewish people to a second Holocaust in less than 10 years. And the United States would not provide any assistance to the Jews. Intel arrived that Britain had supplied arms to Egypt, Jordan, and Iraq, preparing them for the attack. The force of the Haganah numbered only 300. They had almost no equipment, no uniforms, only half the men in each unit had guns. All the freedom fighters of Israel, the Haganah, Etzel together numbered only a few thousand. On the eve of the declaration, Israel's army was ill-equipped, unorganized, with no tanks, no real air force and no battle plan against five professional armies trained and funded by the British. How could the Jews defend themselves? Standing alone against Israel's top military and political ranks, betrayed, isolated, and threatened by the international community including the United States, with Arab armies invading from every front, it was now or maybe never. Under extraordinary pressure, a self-proclaimed secular Zionist, Ben-Gurion was overcome, possessed, with a courageous spirit of biblical proportion. David Ben-Gurion.
In Israel, to be a realist you have to believe in miracles.
He gives his speech, and just like that, 2,000 years of exile came to an end. 1,948 years ago, Jerusalem was destroyed. We are celebrating the most legendary comeback story in human history. Can these bones live? Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. They say our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. Thus, saith the Lord, I'm going to open your graves and lift you out of your graves, my people, and bring you to the land of Israel.
Why? Because God's a miracle-working God and He's not done with the Jewish people. When He says they're going to become a nation again in one day, that's exactly how it's going to happen, no matter who's against it. But once again, we have a problem. There are those who do get excited about this event, and rightly so, but they too make a fatal error. They say something like, yeah. The Jewish people are back in the land again, and they even became a nation again in one day. And speaking of this day, since we know the exact day they became a nation again, this means that this generation will not pass away until the rapture occurs. It's just around the corner. How many of you have heard that? Yeah, it's pretty popular out there too, but let's take a look at that as well. Here's the problem. They misquote the words of Jesus in Matthew 24 concerning the future events and the seven-year tribulation.
Matthew 24:34. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened.
Now, what is all these things? In the context, it's clearly the 7-year tribulation. And what they say is we just need to calculate then, when the Jewish people became a nation, 1948, and then add how long a generation is to that date and voila. We have the beginning of the 7-year tribulation, which means the rapture happens just prior to that. It's time to get excited. Well, I agree, it's time to get excited that Israel became a nation, again, even in one day, but not for those reasons you propose. First of all, this is where the games begin because people who believe in this don't even agree on how long a generation is. Some say it's 37, no it's 40, no maybe 50, or no maybe 70 or how about 80 and on it goes. And each try to pull out a verse to try to prove their point. But what they don't realize is that this generational guessing game was popularized by the false teaching date-setting cult Jehovah's Witnesses. This is partly why they predicted so many false dates for the end of the world. Like 1914, 1925, 1951, 1975, 2000 and on it goes. A lot of it came from a wrong application of this verse. They even have 6 different and contradictory ideas of who this generation is. Is it the ungodly, the anointed, the contemporary, or maybe even a mixture of both? It's all wrong because that's not what Jesus was saying in that verse. The context of Matthew 24 is talking to the Jewish people, not the church, number 1, and 2, it's talking about a future event, the 7-year tribulation. Context, context, context. The generation he's talking about is the future Jewish people who would be in the future 7-year tribulation, not the church, when these things, the 7-year tribulation, take place. That generation of Jewish people in the 7-year tribulation will certainly not pass away until all these things, the 7-year tribulation, have happened. Why? Because God's not done with the Jewish people. They don't get destroyed in the 7-year tribulation. The 7-year tribulation is the instrument God uses to refine, redeem, save, and restore a remnant of Israel, fulfilling his promises way back to the time of Abraham and King David, again, back to the unconditional covenants. That's what Daniel's 70th week prophecy, the 7-year tribulation, is all about. That's why, as we saw before, Paul says right now the Jewish people are under a temporary blindness or hardness until the church age is over, or what's called the fullness of the Gentiles. But, when that time comes in or is over, the church is removed via the rapture, then Israel, the wife, becomes the object of God's focus again, and the 7-year tribulation begins. That's the 70th week prophecy. That's the future time and future people Jesus is talking about and to whom he gives this future promise of preservation to. He's reiterating the unconditional covenants. To me, the greater point of Israel becoming a nation again, even in one day, is not about predicting a date for the rapture or even the start of the 7-year tribulation and then getting excited about that, no. Rather, the point is, it means we are living in the last days and since the rapture is imminent, I can get excited about it right now. I don't need a generational calculation to get me excited over, however long it ends up being on whoever's calculation, based on whatever math or verse you want to dig up. I can get excited about the rapture now because it can happen now. Don't take the news of Israel becoming a nation again, even in one day, in the wrong way. Otherwise you'll rob yourself of the blessings of imminency, again. The fourth end time prophecy concerning the Jewish people letting us know we're living in the last days is that Israel would be a united nation again.
Ezekiel 37:21-22. And give them this message from the Sovereign Lord, I will gather the people of Israel from among the nations. I will bring them home to their own land from the places where they have been scattered. I will unify them into one nation in the land. One king will rule them all, no longer will they be divided into two nations.
Now for those of you who may not know, in about 930 BC, the Jewish people became a divided nation. The northern 10 tribes were called Israel, and the southern 2 tribes were called Judah. And God repeatedly sent prophets to both of them to get them to return back to him, to repent, but to no avail. To Israel, the northern tribes, God sent Elijah with the words like
1 Kings 18:21. How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal is God, follow him. But the people said nothing.
So, God kept the prophets coming with Elisha, Amos, Hosea, Jonah, Nahum, Daniel, and Obadiah, but the people didn't respond, so God sent them off into exile in the Assyrian captivity in 722 BC. Then to the southern tribes in Judah and Benjamin, God sent Joel, Isaiah, Micah, Habakkuk, Jeremiah, and even Ezekiel, but they wouldn't listen either. So, God sent them into exile with the Babylonian exile in 586 BC. In fact, in Micah, the last book of the Old Testament, God ends with these words of warning.
Malachi 4:5-6. See, I will send you the prophet Elijah before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, or else I will come and strike the land with a curse.
This was spoken about 430 BC and led to what was called the 400 years of silence, where God did not speak again to the Jewish people and basically closed up the Old Testament until John the Baptist shows up on the scene, ending the silence, as the forerunner to Jesus, preparing the people's hearts for the Messiah, thus fulfilling Micah's prophecy. Even though the Jewish people had periods of independence, they were still divided as a nation, until now. When the Jewish people regained independence in 1948, for the first time in 2,900 years, Israel was again united as a single nation, too. Just like the Bible said would happen, when you're living in the last days. In fact, speaking of reuniting all the tribes of Israel, just recently the first batch of the members of a lost tribe of Israel arrived back in the land! !7. They're called the B'nai children, Manasseh, who are descendants of the tribe of Manasseh, or Manasseh, and they are one of the 10 lost tribes of Israel which were exiled by the Assyrian Empire some 2,700 years ago. They just came back from northeastern India from the state of Manipur, after receiving permission from the Israeli government to make aliyah, or immigration. Thousands are already back in Israel, with many thousands more to come, and their Jewish brothers and sisters from the other tribes said, "Your arrival is part of the miracle of Israel's return to its land." Here's one news report.
CBN.com reports. For nearly 2,700 years, a tribe called the B'nai Manasseh inside India have kept their Jewish roots. Many believe they are the lost tribes of Israel. Now they are returning to their ancient homeland. As Chris Mitchell explains, this return is also seen as biblical prophecy. Chris Mitchell. Brother found brother, family members of all ages recently reunited with family members at the Ben Gurion Airport. They are part of the lost tribe of Manasseh, called in Hebrew, B'nai Manasseh, returning from India back to Israel. The term goes back to ancient times when 10 of Israel's 12 tribes were banished from the land. Michael Freund, from Shavuot Israel, has worked for years to bring about this moment. He believes that the B'nai Manasseh return fulfills biblical prophecy. Michael Freund, founder, Shavuot Israel. We are watching as prophecy comes to life before our eyes. God remembers His promises to His people Israel. God is faithful. He is gathering His children in from all over the earth. Chris Mitchell. The Assyrian Empire exiled the tribe almost 300 years ago. Although they settled in northeast India, tribe members kept their Jewish roots for more than 2,000 years. Zvi Hoey, B'nai Manasseh coordinator. After 2,700 years of exile, B'nai Manasseh is coming back. One of the lost tribes, B'nai Manasseh has come back. Chris Mitchell. They are the latest Jews that the prophets foretold thousands of years ago, the ingathering of the exiles. David Parsons, Eist Media Director. We believe it is the hand of God. The Lord said He scattered the Jewish people, but He would never leave them scattered among the nations. He would always come and find them even if they were scattered to the ends of the earth, and He said, "I am going to bring your sons from the east," in the book of Isaiah. And these are certainly Jewish people, an ancient Israelite tribe that are coming home from the east. Michael Freund. It's something that their ancestors dreamed about for 2,700 years, and despite being cut off from the rest of the people of Israel for so long, the B'nai Manasseh never forgot who they are. They never forgot where they came from. And they never forgot where they dreamed of one day returning. And now, thank God, they are back home. Chris Mitchell. Their arrival was tearful and emotional. One B'nai Manasseh member. I feel like I'm home. Ephraim, B'nai Manasseh member. I am extremely, it's unexplainable, deep in my heart I feel like crying. Michael Freund. The prophet Isaiah says, "Fear not, for I am with you," God says. "From the east I will bring your descendants." These are the descendants of Israel, and they are coming back from the east. It's as if the headline of today was written by Isaiah the prophet. Chris Mitchell. The flight from India to Israel lasted only 7 hours, but the arrival of the B'nai Manasseh has been a journey that took nearly 3,000 years in the making. Michael Freund. I think what is happening here today is nothing less than a miracle of biblical and historic proportions.
Why? Because God's not done with the Jewish people. And isn't it interesting how even the non-Christian secular Jewish people recognize the prophetic importance of their becoming a united nation again, even with their lost tribes returning to them, just like God said He would. But for most of us, we have no clue about the importance of what's going on here, let alone how it proves just how close we really are to the end of times. Israel not only became a nation again, and not only in one day, but for the first time nearly 3,000 years, Israel is now a single united nation with all the tribes returning back to the land under one banner. That's exactly what the Bible said would happen when you're living in the last days. And yet, what's our attitude? We're either in one spectrum or the other. Either we've got our excitement in the wrong place because we've placed it in a Jewish feast for a false teaching surrounding a date-setting technique, which destroys imminency or encourages replacement theology, or we could just flat-out give a rip. How's the economy doing? Who's going to win the playoffs? Hey, when does football start? Are we really going to listen to this every single week? I didn't come for this. And yet, Israel becoming a nation again, even in one day, as a single united nation, is one of the biggest watershed prophetic moments in history. As the gentleman stated, this is the cornerstone prophetic event of our age. Why? Because without these events taking place, none of these future events could take place. Until Israel becomes a nation again.
There can be no peace treaty with the Antichrist, Daniel 9, no beginning of the seven-year tribulation, Revelation 6, number 144,000 male Jewish witnesses, Revelation 7 and 14, no two Jewish witnesses, Revelation 11, no rebuilt Jewish temple, Revelation 11, no abomination of desolation, Matthew 24, no persecution by the Antichrist of 2/3 arts Jews die, Zechariah 13, no sovereign protection by Michael Archangel for Jews, Revelation 12, no global catastrophic events, Revelation 6-19, no second coming of Jesus, Revelation 19, no judging of the Antichrist and false prophet, Revelation 19, no separation of sheep and goats, Matthew 25, no binding of Satan, Revelation 20, no millennial reign, Revelation 20, no Abrahamic and Davidic covenants upheld, Genesis 12 and 2 Samuel 7, no judging of Satan, Revelation 20, no new heavens and new earth, Revelation 21, no eternal state, Revelation 21.
But here's the point, all these events can now take place since Israel has become a nation again. That's what makes it so important and why you can get excited now about the rapture, because all those events happen after the rapture takes place. It tells us the rapture is getting close. I don't need a Jewish feast for that. I don't need some generational calculation theory. I just need to know Israel is a nation again, in one day, and united, with the tribes coming back. Hoo-hoo. I don't know the day nor the hour, but that's what tells me it's getting close. And this is why, out of love, God has given us this update on the final countdown, tribulation rising concerning the Jewish people and the Antichrist, to show us that the seven-year tribulation is near, and the return of Jesus Christ is rapidly approaching. And that's why Jesus himself said.
Luke 21:28, when these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near.
Like it or not, we are headed for the final countdown. The signs of the seven-year tribulation are rising all around us. It's time to wake up. And so, the point is this. If you're reading this today and you're not a Christian, then I beg you, please heed these signs, heed these warnings, give your life to Jesus now. You don't want to be here when God pours out His judgment upon the nations. It's the worst time in the history of mankind, so horrible that unless God shortened the time frame, the entire human race would be destroyed. The only way to escape is through Jesus. Take the way out now before it's too late. Get saved today. But, if you're reading this today and you're a Christian, then it's high time we stop goofing off and being so disinterested and distracted and get busy working together sharing the gospel with as many as we can. Let's leave here being that faithful, excited bride of Christ, longing for His return, occupying our minds until He comes. Amen?